Hey Ruby Rogues fans, I'm Jamin Holmgren, co-founder of Infinite Red. I used to do a lot of Ruby back in the day, including building iOS apps with Ruby Motion. Anyone remember that? These days, we're a small but experienced team of 30 React Native consultants. We've been around since 2015, and we have a lot of experience in building React Native mobile apps and more, going all the way back to the beginning when it was first released. So if you're looking for expert help building, optimizing, deploying, and supporting a React Native app, I'd love to chat. Just go to infinite.red/RubyRogues. And don't forget to mention that you heard about us through the Ruby Rogues podcast so that we can keep sponsoring the show. Now, back to the episode.
Save on holiday favorites at Safeway. This week at Safeway, get a free Signature Farms whole frozen turkey, grade A, with a minimum purchase of $150 or more in a single transaction. Member price, limit one offer per household. Plus, get 12 ounces of Oscar Mayer bacon for $3.97 each with digital coupon. Limit four. Also this week at Safeway, Lucerne milk, half gallons, selected varieties are $2.47 each with digital coupon. Limit two. Visit Safeway.com or head in store for more deals.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Ruby Rogues podcast. I am your host today, Valentino Stoll, and I'm joined by our co-host, Ayush.
Hello, hello.
And we have a very special guest today, Yosef. Do you want to introduce yourself and tell everybody why you're Ruby famous here?
Yes. Hello everyone. So I'm Yosef. I am a freelance software engineer and apparently now also a book author. I wrote two books. The first one was called Deployment from Scratch, and the second one is called Camel Handbook. And that's probably why we are here today, I assume.
Yeah, you know, Camel is like the one of the latest crazes with all the new Rails announcements that came out of Rails World. So it's kind of exciting to have an expert here. At least somebody who has dove into the trenches and put together all the details for us to, you know, expose the secrets of how minimalistic it is. I hope I honestly haven't had a chance to play with Camel, so I'm looking forward to hearing your take on how it all comes together.
Yeah, I did a deploy or two before the show, just so I know.
So I guess we can start maybe at a high level, like, you know, what does the deploy process like look like, you know, maybe before Camel, and why Camel is even here?
Yeah, so maybe it would be interesting to see it from the point of 37 Signals, because they are the company behind Camel, right? Camel was actually started by David Helmer Hansen, so author of Rails. He also started Camel. And they were doing the deployment with Capistrano, which is a simple Ruby deploy tool. You basically have all your little tasks predefined in Ruby, and then you simply run them. They run on the server. And something happens, you know. Capistrano at the time didn't do much assumptions about what will be on the server or so on. You could define your own tasks, so you could drive the deployment the way you wanted. It was simply a tool given to you. And then they jumped, as everybody else, on this Kubernetes train, right? Like big deployments that have infinite scale. And to me at the time, I was a little bit sad, because I was like, they were the heroes of kind of marketing the simple way of deploys, right? So not everybody has to be on Kubernetes. And then it was announced that they are making the leave from cloud, right? The big saving journey of leaving the cloud. And I know they wanted to make Kubernetes work. They went to some vendors, you know, from SUSE and so on. And David was writing about that. But then he was probably thinking, okay, maybe we can do something on our own, which is not really so unusual for David, I would say. And so they kind of went back to Capistrano roots, but for the new container era. So Kamal is designed around Docker from the ground up, you know, and because of that, it also made some assumptions to make some things a little bit easier. So what state is the SSH kit, which is like Ruby library that simply connects over SSH to your server. But instead of running some just pure bash code, you still run tasks, but they are usually around running Docker commands. So Kamal can install Docker and then simply run various Docker commands tasks. The simplest way how you can think about it at the simplest level is simply that Kamal will connect and run Docker run name of your application, you know. And it doesn't even have a specific Docker pool task, for example, because that's already something that Docker does itself. So Kamal really tries to be as minimalistic as possible and as simple as possible. There are some limitations to that, of course. And I would say the simplicity maybe confuses people sometimes, because as you said, so what is the deploy process, right? And usually I would say before the deploy itself, you prepare the server beforehand, which we can call provisioning, you know. Part of that step can be even spinning up the virtual machines, for example, is what most people would probably do, unless you have physical servers, and then installing some software firewalls and so on. It's just that with Kamal, we don't need anything else for the Kamal to work than Docker. And even Docker can be installed by Kamal. So it simplifies it a lot, but it's still like one piece of a puzzle. Maybe you need other tools. You want to install some monitoring or backup scripts or whatever. So it's just one part of the whole process.
Nice. So noob question straight off the bat. I assume this will also be maybe a source of confusion for someone who doesn't know a whole lot about Docker or just the modern deployment complexity and stuff, but can you explain what the difference between Kubernetes and Kamal is for people who don't understand either of them?
Yeah, so basically you can split this kind of deploy systems to two categories. One that's doing push to the server. So you are pushing your configuration to the server, your changes to the server. In terms of Kamal, that means from your local computer or the CI server, you will run Kamal deploy and Kamal will issue the concrete commands that have to run on all those servers that you defined. And Kubernetes is the other category, which we call like a pool systems, where usually you have one host that runs the main master agent in so sort of way. And the other servers run some lightweight minion agents. And so the central system is that one master host, and all the systems around it can pull the information from it. So they constantly fetch the new information. And if they see, okay, there is a new version, then they go and pull the information themselves.
Oh, cool. That makes sense. So, why would, say, me as an indie developer who is building very small apps on very small scale, and I'm thinking, do I even need Docker? Like, do I even need Kamal? Like, what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, in terms of what I was speaking about, the split between like Kubernetes and this agent systems, that's what I think that you don't really need for small scale, right? Because you don't need extra resources to run the agents. You don't need the extra master server that maybe also needs some kind of backup to be available and so on. But as you say, there's still the question about Docker itself, like, isn't even Docker overhead, right? I saw some people commenting on Ruby subreddit, and they were like kind of criticizing Kamal for using Docker when DHH wants Rails to be no build, hashtag no build, right, on the front end, but then introducing build process on the server side. But Docker still has several advantages. First of all, we really prepackage the application in the container, so we can be sure of what's really inside, and that at this revision the application was running, which is important when you will be doing a rollback, you know, when something wrong happened and you want to roll back. Then you know that the previous version was actually running fine. The problem with Capistrano way of doing that is that suddenly you are trying to switch back to a Ruby version that hopefully is there, but maybe if there was some system changes, you know, system updates, system utilities, and a lot of Rails application also shell out to call some system tools, right? So suddenly you don't even know what will happen because it can go all wrong.
Yeah, for those that aren't aware, Capistrano is all like local file system and just has like a, you know, symlink cutoff to switch whatever production version you're using, right, behind the scenes. TLDR of it. There's other stuff, right?
Exactly as you say. And of course, yes, it's simply a trade-off. You can't really say it's so much better or so much worse. I think for modern deploys, it's preferable to do it with something like Docker or different container technology. But I do sympathize somehow to the Docker criticism, because you now need a Docker registry to save your images, which, by the way, David suggested that they will get rid of in some future versions of Kamal. So hopefully that will go away. But yeah, it's a new thing to learn, basically. So I understand, especially because when I was writing my first book, Deployment from Scratch, I also basically did something like Capistrano, except I didn't even use Ruby. I simply do it with Bash only, you know. So you don't have to learn any other tool, and you can still install and run. And the biggest advantage there is that the switch, the update, can be really fast. If you are not even installing a new version of RubyGem, for example, it's really, it's seconds, you know. It's really super fast. But I think the other advantages of Docker deploys really are better for most people, for majority of people. And when I saw Kamal as a tool, I told myself, okay, this is it. Because since I had this Bash script kind of deploy, you know, very, very straightforward, I was thinking myself of doing some kind of small tool, something like Kamal. At the time, I was thinking maybe using some components like Kedi for web server, you know, or maybe Podman instead of Docker, because my background is in like Fedora, Linux, and stuff. But I know that my little tool would again be just for me, you know. So I thought like Kamal is the closest to what I want, and so that's how I basically started to be interested and started to look more into it.
Yeah, you know, I really liked Kamal's direction to make it just easier to jump on Docker without having to like necessarily worry about like how you configure Docker and like connect all of the services and things like that out of the box anyway, right? And then because it sets you up kind of like, okay, if you needed to scale, you could then move to some other, you know, provider like AWS or something that could scale the nodes for you pretty easily, and you can reuse all the configuration stuff. And so it's a little exciting in that way. And it makes me think though, like So how does this compare to like something like, you know, tools like Chef or, you know, some other configuration management aspects of like, you know, the system deployment process? Like where are some advantages that Kamal could lead us where you know, maybe, I know Chef is like a, it takes some extreme getting used. There's onboarding ramp, like pretty steep learning curve. But like, where do you see Kamal like kind of maybe simplifying that, or how does it compare, or does it not? Like,
yeah, I think that there is this confusion among the deploy systems, because then you have exactly as you say, Chef or Ansible, and they maybe started as more like configuration tools, but they also offer you a way to do a deploy, you know. So they are not completely obsolete with Kamal, because you can still use them, provision the servers, and then use Kamal for the deploy part. In my case, I find that I don't need that much of the configuration. I mean, Kamal itself even builds itself as almost you don't need anything, but that's not really true, and then people are disappointed. But for me, I, for example, included a very small Ruby script, which is just a little bit wrapper around some shell commands.
Save on holiday favorites at Safeway. This week at Safeway, get a free Signature Farms whole frozen turkey, grade A, with a minimum purchase of $150 or more in a single transaction. Member price, limit one offer per household. Plus, get 12 ounces of Oscar Mayer bacon for $3.97 each with digital coupon. Limit four. Also this week at Safeway, Lucerne milk, half gallons, selected varieties are $2.47 each with digital coupon. Limit two. Visit Safeway.com or head in store for more deals.
Hay tres tipos de personas escuchando este anuncio de radio. Uno, gente que ni siquiera ha escuchado que estamos sirviendo un vaso de leche. Esas personas viven con prisa, sin tiempo para nada. Dos, aquellos que escuchan cómo servimos la leche y ya la están visualizando en su mente. Son personas capaces de desacelerar y poner atención al mundo que los rodea. Tres, aquellos que ya tienen antojo por un delicioso vaso de leche. Si tú eres una de ellas, este anuncio de Got Milk es para ti. Real enjoyment is back. Real is back. Got Milk?
To provision some very basic things for the server, like firewalls, different SSH user for security reasons, and so on. And in this way, you might find out that you need so little that you don't really need a proper tool like Chef. But at the same time, I wouldn't say that Kamal makes it obsolete, because they complement each other. I do wonder if David, for example, still have in his mind to release something complementing Kamal, because Kamal is so simple and it started as a multi-server tool, but at the same time, it cannot deploy a load balancer like in front of the servers, right? You have a proxy that does the gapless deploys on each of host, like each server, but you still need like third-party load balancer. So Kamal is like really like a very specific tool. And I wonder if simply Kamal will maybe get a little bit bigger and better in this way to handle these things, or there will be something else, maybe.
Would you use Kamal for your like own independent single server applications as well, or would you use your bash script, whatever approach you taught in your first book?
So I switched everything to Kamal for all my projects, and also I was working with some clients to switch them to Kamal. For me, although I actually really used the bash scripts from the book, they were developed specifically to be educational. I didn't say don't use tools, don't use Kubernetes. But I rewrited it to pure bash to simply show people that everything else is an abstraction, right? For example, when you have Ansible, it's written in Python. It's a lot of Python code that in the end prepares a bash code, bash script that it copies onto the remote server, and then it executes it there, right? So I basically skipped the part where I have to teach someone about different tools, because to be honest, the tools come and go. So the idea for the first book was really not being about particular tool, but more like how this actually works. But since we have Camel, I think it's for me, it's like a perfect tool. There's some alternative. You can look into Doku or maybe even simple Doku Compose. But personally, I think Camel has advantage to them because they are it's designed for multi-server use from the ground up. And basically, the single server use case was like edit later, right, with Camel 2. And compared to Doku, there's also a different philosophy. It's not like PaaS. It's more like really just a deploy tool. But if I'm deploying my own application that I also develop, I think Camel fits best to that use case. You know, maybe if you want to deploy some public application, maybe it's easier to install something like Coolify or some other tools that can one-click install them. But I think if you are the developer of the application, that really fits the philosophy the best. And for me personally, I really switched 100%.
Yeah, to add on to that, I'm seeing there's a PR open right now to add cloud native build packs to Camel, which would be interesting, where you can basically build the app based off of other ones pretty easily.
Yeah. So basically, that's the single, I would say, advantage of Doku today, that it can be a little bit more magical. It somehow will build it for you, and you don't have to write Dockerfile.
Right.
But lucky for us, Rails actually comes with Dockerfile, so there is no extra work. That is not true for every framework. But of course, if you are adopting Docker, I still recommend looking into how to build Dockerfile, how to optimize it. For example, before I was trying to squeeze the Dockerfile for my Rails applications, you know, I was removing all the files. I don't need them to have small footprint, since you have to do the image and pull and push. So yeah.
So what is like kind of like the full process? Like, let's say we do like a Rails new app and we wanted to like deploy it with Camel to like some Linode or something, right? Or DigitalOcean Droplet. Like, what is the steps of the process there? Like, to just like Rails new.
Yeah.
I have a, you know, so CMS.
So let's say you did a Rails new, you have your Docker file. So that's one prerequisite you have to have. For the Docker file, because maybe you are not on Rails, so let's just mention that you do need your server to run on port 80. You can change it, but it's like default if you want it to simply work. That's the main thing for the Docker file. Then you will need a Docker registry. So make an account at Docker Hub, or maybe your provider has its own registry that you can use. And you need to create like, Camel calls it still like registry password, but you should create a token and note it down. And then you will need to create some virtual machine. It can be Hetzner, it can be DigitalOcean, any cloud provider like that would work. And for that, you will need to create SSH key pairs. So you will create key pair. That means you have two keys, one private and one public, right? So the private, obviously, you have to protect, like the registry password. And during the creation of the virtual machine, when you go like create, you choose some resources, you know, how big the VM should be and so on. And then it will ask you to copy your key there. So that's how they will provision the VM for you. And you should disable the password password login value are there just for security. And so that's what you need to have, you know, at the minimum, like the basic ones. Now maybe you also want to deploy to a domain name, so then obviously you have to purchase a domain name, and you will need a DSN record at the very least type A to point your domain to the IP address, to the public IP address you will get for the machine you just provisioned. And if you have that, you can basically start with Camel. With Camel in it, there is some basic configuration file. There are comments in line, so even when you never saw it, you can usually guess a little bit what you will have to put there. So you will name your application. Camel calls it service. I would also say be careful of the name, because when you are doing the Docker local private networking, it's also like kind of a name that you are using. So you cannot like put any characters you want there, you know, just stick to normal letters and dashes and then you're fine. So you are not surprised later that it doesn't work. Then you specify the image, which is your container registry's username, like slash the application name, basically. And then you can put the IP address among servers. When you do that, you are configuring your application server by default the role called web, and we can return just after this one how Camel splits the application server roles and accessories. But for now, if you just put there the IP address, that's enough. And then you will configure your proxy. You will say, okay, I want SSL, and you will put there host, which is your domain name, or it can be also subdomain. It can be even more hosts if you want. So very, very flexible. This is very nice. Then you finish up with the registry, and then there's builder configuration, but by default, I think there's some reasonable value. And once you have all this, then you only need to provide the environment, which is the secrets we talk about, like Camel registry password, but it can be many more secrets that the application have, obviously. So you list them in two ways. Basically, some environment variables you can list directly, but the secret ones you actually just put under like env secret in the YAML file, and then you only list them, but they live somewhere else. When you did the Camel init from before, Camel also created .camel/secrets file. That's where the secrets are. And of course, then you can also call password managers and so on. But at the very basic one, you would just put the secrets there. You will not check it in the source control. And then your configuration is done. You run Camel setup, and Camel does everything for you. It will connect to the server. It will install Docker. It will install the Camel proxy, and then it will boot your application. So that's the most minimalistic way of deploying with Camel.
Gotcha. So I'm walking through the commands, like as you were reading through that. And just so like we can, most people know Heroku, right? Like Heroku new, and then deploy, git push Heroku. And it seems like there's really like the three, Camel commands that really do run through that. Well, everything you just said, right? Which is pretty wild. Where we have like Camel init creates all the configuration files. Camel config starts to create your initial configuration file to add all of the stuff to. And then you have Kamal deploy that just like push that up and proxy to the new version, right, of the app.
Yeah, basically, as you say, I mean, the Kamal config is already created with Kamal in it, and Kamal config simply rechecks that the configuration, it's good. That's actually a good point to run before the deploy. Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, that's where we want to head, right? Like, it's pretty close. I mean, I guess like, yeah, I mean, so many hosting providers now have that like one clip process to just get your VM up that it almost doesn't even make sense to abstract away that process, right? To make it easier because they already provide that for the most part. But this is really cool. So I'm trying to think like, we walked through a very simple, like, example, right? And I imagine like with all of the push to solid Q and solid XYZ, like this is all running on a single machine. How does all of that work? Like, is it by default running the database on the same web server?
Yeah, so that's a good question for talking a little bit about how Kamal actually splits your application and what it actually does for you. Because this was a simple example. You have one VM, one container, right? But your application probably does a little bit more. It has to run jobs or some kind of other scheduling, or maybe you are running an API server or some marketing website, and then all those needs databases. So at the high level, Kamal splits this into servers and accessories. So servers are your application servers. Those all run your application image. So you cannot build like from multiple images. It has to be one image. There's just different command that is being run, but it comes from that application. Of course, you can package whatever you want in the container, and you, for example, can have application.
Save on holiday favorites at Safeway. This week at Safeway, get a free Signature Farms whole frozen turkey, grade A, with a minimum purchase of $150 or more in a single transaction. Member price, limit one offer per household. Plus, get 12 ounces of Oscar Mayer bacon for $3.97 each with digital coupon. Limit four. Also this week at Safeway, Lucerne milk, half gallons, selected varieties are $2.47 each with digital coupon. Limit two. Visit Safeway.com or head in store for more deals.
Llevo una doble vida. Soy dos personas en una. En mi trabajo soy Peter y en mi casa soy Pedro. Vanilla milkshake con Stephanie y leche con chocolate caliente en casa de mi tía Norma. Soy dude y soy mijo. Soy WhatsApp y qué onda a la vez. Rap y cumbia. Fútbol y fútbol. De aquí para allá, de allá para acá. En el arroz con leche de mi abuela es donde todas mis personalidades se ponen de acuerdo. Real is back. Got milk?
Role that runs a Django application next to it, you know, but you have to put it to the image because that's kind of a constraint that Kamal puts on you. And with these server roles, it's important to say that there is a primary role. By default, it's called web, but you can rename it. And the primary role assumption is that this is your main application server. That's your Rails S, basically, or like your Puma starting up. And why is it important? Because it plays in a role how Kamal actually does deploy on multiple servers and also on each particular server. Because when it boots your application, it usually boots your accessories, which are the databases, all these load running services that are not necessarily, I mean, they're connected with your application, but it's something else. You know, they're not part of the Kamal deploy process per se. They should already be running, and you are simply taking use of it. But the primary role is important because Kamal changed a little bit regarding health checks and how it ensures that actually the container is healthy and can serve traffic or can run. Before with traffic, we had something like a code file. I will not really go into it because it's already kind of obsolete, but I will say that the new way, there is something called web barrier. Maybe you won't find this name in the docs, but you might find it in the code or somewhere in the issues. That's how camel maintainers call it. And the web barrier means that camel will wait first for your web container to boot up successfully, the new one, for example, for the new version. And once it's healthy, then it assumes it can boot everything else. So all other roles, whether it's jobs or marketing sites or whatever you put there, will also start without any further health check, because the only camel proxy checks is for this primary role. So that's very important to realize. For example, you might be deploying front-end and back-end, you know, split. And with camel, you can have front-end application as one application and back-end as one application. But if you are putting it together and you are simply splitting it into roles, then one of them has to be the primary that camel will wait on, and then it will also boot the others. So that's like one important thing. You can still have health checks also for other containers, but then it's just the regular Docker health checks that you can add there, but nothing to do with the camel proxy process of booting.
So which Docker registry would you personally recommend people use?
I think the... So I personally use Docker Hub right now. I want to support them because I know they had a hard time as a company to actually make money out of Docker. And it's great that Docker is free and everything, you know, but to support them, I use them currently. Maybe the smart answer is use the registry with your provider because it might be faster for you, you know. Might be even cheaper because I think they're increasing prices right now with Docker Hub. But I like the idea of supporting them in some way. So right now I'm using their registry.
Cool. And so the thing with this is more of a broader question around self-hosting as opposed to using a pass. The two things that kind of scare me about self-hosting, which is why I haven't actually deployed an app by myself yet. I use render.com personally. The two things that kind of scare me, one is database backups for like, I use Postgres personally, but I probably use SQLite for the next project, which would make life a bit easier in that regard. But database backups and OS upgrades. So like for someone who's only ever used like Heroku or Render and never had to worry about this kind of stuff, what would you tell them?
Well, so you mentioned backups first, right? So in the Docker way of doing backups is likely to simply run a Docker container that does backups, right? That's Docker way because you have to run everything in Docker. You can still do manual backups as before. I actually mentioned it in camel handbooks how to do it. So you can still do manual backup. You can call, you know, the command is a bit larger because you have to use the... It is actually a good point that camel to edit aliases. So you can prepare these commands and then have like nice camel backup and it will do backup, right? So in a way, it works the same as normal self-hosting, but it's definitely more work than just using managed database. And I would say, it might be good for people to first just move with their server load, like application servers, and wait with the database, just use the managed database. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I think most people will run it like that, will take advantage of the managed database because it saves you a lot of hassle, which is true. But yeah, if you want to do it yourself, you would run a container there. Then you can upload it, for example, every day to S3 or something like that, and also have a way to pull it back if something happens. I also recommend to always turn on the automatic VM backups, which means the whole VM is backup like every day on your cloud hosting provider. This is especially cool for like this project that, for example, I deploy. You know, they are not big yet. They are one per server. So I know I have snapshot every day with database, and but also everything else. So I can just with one click to return there and continue. Which is really, really good. But, you know, as it is with backups, it's good to always have like two different backups, maybe, just to be sure. So I think that extra assurance can be this virtual machine backups as a whole. Yeah. And actually, with the system updates, I think it's kind of similar, because if you have backup of the VM and you can return, and return to the process later. And with Kamal, if you have more hosts, you can simply put the host that you're upgrading like kind of offline, you know, upgrade the system there, and then you put it back to the pool of servers. That's ideal. If you have more servers and you can do it, that's like safe way to run it.
Does the current Kamal proxy handle like load balancing to do like slow rollouts of versions of the app, or?
Yeah, it will. It does so-called blue-green deploy. So on every host, it will put the new application you're running, also the old one. Then after the health check, it switch, but then also it like goes and runs it across all hosts, right? Yeah. So yeah, there's some settings, some little settings around that, and it will do the rollout for you. Yeah,
that's really cool. So I'd love to shift gears a little bit into this whole like Kamal accessory stuff, because this is something where I wasn't immediately obvious like how it all works and when's the best use case, right? Where when it's not good thing to use as an accessory, like what is an accessory, right? Do you want to just give us like a high level, like what the Kamal accessories are, and like one example of like the most common one that you would add to a new app?
Yeah. So basically, accessories are Kamal way of running like some kind of permanent services, you know, that are not part of that deploy lifecycle. They simply run next to it, whether that's relational databases, key value stores, search engines, maybe headless browsers, you know, anything else that you just run as a service, basically, service that your application is using. Most people will simply use a database as an accessory or first accessory. And then you can run accessories on the same host or different host. Basically, that's what I really like about Kamal. You simply put the IP there, IP address, and it will deploy on that host. You know, whether that was an application role or accessory, it just puts it where you want it. If you want to collocate it with the roles, you can also just say, okay, just put it where the role web is.
Hay tres tipos de personas escuchando este anuncio de radio. Uno, gente que ni siquiera ha escuchado que estamos sirviendo un vaso de leche. Esas personas viven con prisa, sin tiempo para nada. Dos, aquellos que escuchan cómo servimos la leche y ya la están visualizando en su mente. Son personas capaces de desacelerar y poner atención al mundo que los rodea. 3. Aquellos que ya tienen antojo por un delicioso vaso de leche. Si tú eres una de ellas, este anuncio de Got Milk es para ti. Real enjoyment is back. Real is back. Got Milk?
Honey, Bobby might get strep throat this season. Does sometime after Thanksgiving work for you?
Some things you just can't plan. Sorry, November's bad. I have Maddie scheduled for the flu.
That's why we built a network of Stanford pediatricians conveniently located all over the Bay Area. And while you can't always plan for when your kids need to see their doctor...
Mom, is it okay if I get pink eye next week?
It's nice to know we're close by. Stanford Medicine Children's Health. Access to excellence. Visit stanfordchildrens.org to find a pediatrician.
And then it will automatically put the application next to your database next to your application on that server, so you don't even have to specify the IP again, for example. But in principle, you can really spin it up anywhere you want.
That's neat. So like, let's say a more advanced one would be something like Sidekick or like a background processor. Like, how do the deploys then work? Like, as you deploy a new version and it needs to like do like a rolling restart to wait for, you know, whatever jobs to finish before it cycles over to the new version for new jobs. What's that kind of process?
So with Sidekick, it's we are still talking about application role. You would call it like jobs, for example, right? And as I said before, it's not a primary role. So the health check there is not really done. It waits for the web container to boot. And once at least one of them boots, so it can be on different host, you know, like once it successfully boots, Kamal said, okay, I know the application is probably built well. That's the assumption. Then it will simply start the boot process for also the other roles. So for roles that are not web-based, there's this assumption that you can simply decommission them and, you know, start them again. If you have more web roles, you can also say that, okay, run the proxy, Kamal proxy with this role. And then the request will be still drained. So Kamal proxy will still wait for the request to finish before it will be switching, you know, but that's really just the roles that are what we could call proxy roles, roles that use proxy. But the other ones, they are not really, there's not really a big assumption of like, Kamal is really a tool that doesn't know that you are deploying Sidekick or that you are deploying PostgreSQL accessory. It doesn't know, you know. That's why there's also not like some kind of plugin to run PostgreSQL or MySQL. It's the configuration you have to do. That's the simplicity, but maybe also annoyance for some people that Kamal just does what you tell it to do.
Gotcha. So you. It's just the interface. You have to like kind of figure out all of the implementation details of it, of how you're using it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, in the simplest way, it really just runs Docker containers with Docker run, and sometimes there are health check involved, you know. And it's important to learn how the lifecycle goes, like that. Okay, accessories are boot first, then the servers are booted first, the primary role, then the others. And when you realize that, then you can think about how to write the configuration you need.
So what are the latest releases in version 2 that has gotten you pretty excited about?
Yeah, so I think Kamal 2 is now probably interesting even to people that weren't interested in Kamal 1, you know. For one, deploying to a single server is so much easier and straightforward. There were ways how to do it with Kamal 1, but you had to configure traffic and it was a bit annoying. And now it's all seamless in the config. You just write which host, SSL true, and there you have it. It's like number one thing for Kamal 2. That it auto-provisions your SSL certificates with Lux and Encrypt. You don't have to do anything. It's just in the configuration. But there is one caveat I would just say with that. It does not apply for multi-host deployment. Because again, Kamal is so simple. There is no centralized really way of sharing the issued certificates, for example. You know, the different hosts doesn't know about each other. So if you would be issuing certificates again on every host, then maybe you run out of the attempts at let's encrypt or something like that. But for single server, that's like big leap forward, I would say. But in general, the deploys get faster, you know, because of the process I described. So there's maybe a little bit less health checks done, because there's just like one for the primary roles, and then we are rolling, you are going for it. But that makes it really faster. Also, ditching traffic has one nice side effect, that the server CPU utilization went down, because that was one thing that was constantly polling for like...
Unborn babies may kick their mother 30 times an hour, making moms wonder, is that a karate champion in there? Well, one thing she won't wonder about is finding a great doctor at one of our 65 convenient Bay Area locations. Stanford Medicine Children's Health.
Honey, Bobby might get strep throat this season. Does sometime after Thanksgiving work for you?
Some things you just can't plan.
Sorry, November's bad. I have Maddie scheduled for the flu.
That's why we built a network of Stanford pediatricians conveniently located all over the Bay Area. And while you can't always plan for when your kids need to see their doctor...
Mom, is it okay if I get pink eye next week?
It's nice to know we're close by. Stanford Medicine Children's Health. Access to excellence. Visit stanfordchildrens.org to find a pediatrician.
State of Docker containers, right? Because the configuration doesn't live on the traffic side, but on the container side, so it's constantly polling. So if you would look, you would have some CPU utilization all the time, and that's not the case with the new camel proxy. You know, the proxy is pretty like simple. It doesn't do too much. It routes to hosts. You can register a service. It takes care of draining the request when it's switching over. No, and there are not many features of like what proxy could have, like KDE or Nginx. You know, it does some basic request response buffering, or handles like maximum request sizes and proxy headers. But it doesn't even do anything with, let's say, your static assets, right? For that, we have Truster. So they didn't really copy, for example, this functionality to camel proxy. It's still simple. I think simple is good. Some people might find it limiting. Let's see what we'll see in the future, because I would say the development of camel, since I started to look into it, and then even since I started to write camel handbook, was really, really fast, right? I did already like 2 updates, like basically had 2 editions, the first one with a big update for camel 1.7. So yeah, it's faster, it's much easier to use, I would say, and things are going well.
Yeah, you bring up something that I was trying to work through, how you were doing camel. I guess like, let's say like, you know, you want to like configure or tune some like Nginx caching or proxies specific in Nginx or some other system level configuration. Is that all handled like in whatever server that you would configure with camel? Like it's a step away from that aspect. And maybe how does it like, can it work with it to auto-generate that kind of stuff?
So camel work with some assumption. As I said, it doesn't provision load balancer in front of your servers, right? And similarly, it doesn't really handle some serving of static assets. The assumption is that you either use something like Truster inside your image, for example, so you have one more little proxy there. You could also have, for example, your own Nginx load balancer that would also does this caching, but you will have to deploy it yourself. That's the thing. Yeah. Camel won't do it for you. Or there's this assumption that most people maybe will just proxy with Cloudflare, and do the caching there, you know. So there is some limitation to it. For most people, I think there's a way how to do it. It's just like it's not handled directly in Camel right now.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, still early days.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, cool. So is there any like dashboard or monitoring or something like that that's available to like kind of see things? I see there's like a, you know, Camel details where you can kind of peek at the apps and services running. Is there any like UX stuff out there that people are using to visualize or gather metrics or things like this?
Well, I believe that for the sensing, they use something like from Elastic's search tag, like Grafana or something like that. For my sync server deploys, for example, I take advantage of DigitalOcean agent because you can just click you want it, and then you have very beautiful dashboard that you get for free, basically. You can even set up alerts. So for very small hosting, for example, what I do, I think that works very nicely. I know that somebody is making something, but it was not announced. So maybe there will be some Camel specific tooling, but right now we don't have it. So you have to do the usual way if you want host monitoring, install Datadog agents, you know, or doing Grafana. It's definitely something that's not really solved in the, easy way to just like enable and run with. But I think that would be some nice project for somebody for sure.
Yeah, you definitely got me wanting to deploy a couple of apps just for fun. So what are maybe some things that you're looking forward to or maybe hopeful that they get added? I mean, outside of like the two items that we just talked about with the, you know, maybe making proxying a little easier or the metrics aspects, like is there anything missing from the process that you like hope gets added?
For me, I was kind of already happy with Camel 1. I mean, now that I see Camel 2, I'm even more happy. But I kind of already made it work, you know. It did the job. And for example, when we were comparing with Capistrano in the beginning, you know, it doesn't also have some kind of dashboard for you, you know, because the tool is limited. And in some way, I think it's good that it has some kind of limits. Some kind of philosophy of what it wants to be, and then there can be a sister project that provides the extra features. So I will talk about, of course, like this kind of dashboard or maybe even nicer backups. All these things would be nice, or maybe provisioning. Actually, it was my idea that I could develop this project, that it would be like zero config provisioning for Camel. That would be the headline, you know. I don't know if I will get to it, but that's idea I have. So, personally, I would see it as sister projects. I also think that David suggested that, yeah, Camel will probably stay focused. And I think it's a good thing, because when I look at Doku, for example, it was like the single server pass. It was very well for that. But now I checked docs recently, and I see that there's also a way how to spin up a K3S scheduler, you know, and then you are like kind of diluting the tool to be everything for everybody. And that's also, in the end, a negative for me. So I'm happy if it stays simple, you know, improves in little ways. And I'm happy, man. Yeah,
I hear you. It's going to be hard to shake like the existing like larger infrastructure stuff. Focusing on like the very specific simple utility of Docker maintenance and services definitely is appealing. Like Going off of that, then, is there anything like you would like to see removed from the overall like architecture process that maybe is just causing more headache and confusion than is adding value?
Not really. I have to say that the change with secrets for me was a little bit maybe a downside in a my specific way, because what I was doing since I knew how Kamal really works, I kept on CI maybe just like two amps, and I could like just do deploy and not really put my secrets to GitHub, you know, which I was very happy about. And now you either have to put it there or use a secret manager, which of course, if you are a company, you should be using secret management. But for me, I was like, I have this little projects and I was happy that I could do it this way, and now I can't. But in a way, I still think it's probably better. It's just like that in my specific case, I was happy to also deploy without the change to environment, because before it was two steps, Kamal NV5, that was push the amps and then Kamal deploy. But now it's all together. So you do need all amps, because if you don't have them, then it will fail. So that's maybe like one thing in my specific case, but I think generally it's still a step forward for Kamal. And you know, I wish people would maybe replace some Kubernetes clusters, but to be honest, it's probably not what will necessarily happen. I think the most value from Kamal can get people that are now deploying with just Docker Compose. Because Docker Compose is originally like dev tool, you have to put all the containers down and up. And I know there are some third-party proxies that tries to solve this stepless deploy, but Kamal is so much nicer in my opinion, you know. And whatever criticism you would have for Kamal, it would probably apply there as well. So I think it's just like a plus, it's just a better tool.
Unborn babies may kick their mother 30 times an hour, making moms wonder, is that a karate champion in there? Well, one thing she won't wonder about is finding a great doctor at one of our 65 convenient Bay Area locations. Stanford Medicine Children's Health.
Honey, Bobby might get strep throat this season. Does sometime after Thanksgiving work for you?
Some things you just can't plan.
Sorry, November's bad. I have Maddie scheduled for the flu.
That's why we built a network of Stanford pediatricians conveniently located all over the Bay Area. And while you can't always plan for when your kids need to see their doctor...
Mom, is it okay if I get pink eye next week?
It's nice to know we're close by. Stanford Medicine Children's Health. Access to excellence. Visit stanfordchildrens.org to find a pediatrician.
But, we'll see.
Yeah, I think we've covered quite a lot of topics here. We're kind of coming to, you know, time here. But is there any other things you wanted to cover before we move into our pick section of the show?
Not really cover, but if I can, I would just like want to thank you, David, for even starting Kamal, and also thank Donald McBreen, who done a lot of work on Kamal 2 and also wrote a foreword. So thank you, Donald. And also to Kevin McConnell, because he was the main guy behind Kamal Proxy, which is very important aspect of Kamal 2. And then also a final shout out to Rosa, because she kind of sent Donald the information that I'm writing the book. And then he wrote me an email, and that's how it all happened. So yeah, thank you guys, and everybody else that you know works on Kamal. I would like to thank.
Yeah, seriously, thank you. All this stuff is definitely going to make it easier to work with Docker, at least. But it should help with deploys in general. It's definitely helpful to have a definitive Rails process for deployments, which was missing for quite a long time. So it's exciting to see. Well, great. We're going to move into picks. It's a segment of our show where we just find some things that we are excited about in life or code or whatever it may be that pique your interest. I can kick us off. I have this particle, infatuation. It's a little hardware devices, little microcontrollers. They have this little development board called the Muon that lets you do things with cellular and mesh it with Wi-Fi, so you can get like a blended solution on a microcontroller. It's a lot of fun. I'm messing with it just for fun. I've been playing with OpenAI's new pipeline for fine tuning stuff. They call it distillation. It's a lot of fun, where you could just send all of your AI prompts and responses to OpenAI, and they'll automatically fine tune a new model for you based on the outputs and inputs that you give it, which is just wild. I'm having a lot of fun just messing around and seeing what I can get it to do.
Nice.
I definitely. I just wanted to say this, just little improvements in life that you can do. For example, on my travels this year, I switched to finally using eSIM, so I didn't have to buy a physical SIM, change on the airport when I was sweaty and tired and everything. I just click in my phone and I had service, and it's these little things that actually are really amazing that I love. But since my book is about also kind of doing something independently, in the hacking spirit, I want to do a recommendation for one show. It's called The Indie Life. It's by Dagobert. He was doing a startup, he kind of failed, he also got divorced, and now he's starting this show where he discusses with people also the not so glamorous side of this indie hacking entrepreneurship and stuff. It's a nice show, so I would recommend this to check out.
Cool. Is there any eSIM provider that you'd recommend? Because I'm traveling to New Zealand about 3 weeks, and I was looking at eSIMs as well.
It was just my first time. I picked one that sounded it covered the countries I go, and that's it. But it worked. Okay. It worked nice. It's probably a bit more expensive, but I mean, I really appreciate the leveling up in the comfort of travel. So for me,
yeah, for sure, it's definitely worth the price. Yeah. Right, my picks. I've got a movie and a TV show. So I watched a movie last night called A Night on Earth by Jim Jarmusch. I think it's from 1991. Absolutely brilliant. If you like character-driven movies that don't have a lot of plot but have very colorful characters, this is the kind of movie for you, I think. Really enjoyed it. A guy I met at the Haggis Ruby conference last week recommended this movie. That's why I watched it. And yeah, I'd recommend it to everyone else. And season 2 of a show called Shrinking has just started on Apple TV. I loved season 1, and season 2 started off really strongly as well. I think 4 episodes are out. It's starring Harrison Ford and Jason Segel from who's familiar with How I Met Your Mother would know who he is. And Ted Lasso fans will also be happy to hear that Brett Goldstein has joined the cast for season 2. So if any of those names ring a bell, might be a show worth checking out because I'm a huge fan. Those are my 2 picks.
Awesome. Yeah, I always love a good TV movie show combo. Josef, it was really great having you on today. Thank you for sharing all of your deep diving on Kamal. And for those that haven't checked it out yet, check out all of Yosef's great books that he's putting together. The Kamal Handbook, for sure. I'm going to be diving into that myself. So I appreciate you taking the time today and honestly spending all that time putting this content together, because it's much needed.
Thank you. And thank you for having me on the show. I enjoyed it a lot.
Awesome. Well, we'll have to have you come on again when Kamal 3 comes out, and we can get you to tear apart all the great new features that are to come, I'm sure.
Perfect.
Well, that's it for today, folks. I'm Valentino. Thank you, Ayush. Thank you, Yosef. Until next time.
Decisions.
Wait a minute. Are you still looking for cars on Carvana?
Yeah. Decisions.
When I use Carvana, I found the exact car I was looking for in minutes. Bought it on the spot.
Electric or full diesel? Decisions.
Come on. You've been at it for weeks. Just buy it already.
You're right. Crossover it is. Decisions decided.
Whether you know exactly what you want or like to take your time, buy your car the convenient way with Carvana.
This season, say yay to fresh flavors in every aisle with lucky deals that'll make you smile. Gobble up the savings on honeysuckle white whole frozen turkey, 12 to 22 pounds, just 49 cents per pound with a qualifying $25 purchase. Limit one while supplies last. Plus, save up to $1 per pound on Idaho baking potatoes or white onions, only 99 cents per pound with digital coupon. Shop lucky in-store or online and make it a holla yay with festive deals that shine.